This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/know-how and entering the promo code KNOWHOW. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code KNOWHOW to visit a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. Today on KNOWHOW,
Networking 101 Part 2, Basic Router Setup.
It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to be dropping some knowledge on you so you can drop it on others. Cranky
right.
Hippo, last week we started a new series here on Know How, idea of the Networking 101.
Right, because, I mean, over the course of Know How, we've talked about routers, we've talked about networking, but never just like in a kind of crash course fashion and where we started from beginning to end and really got into it.
And it's always good to sort of bring it back because everyone's going to need that information.
Yes.
I mean, sometimes you feel kind of silly asking the questions that you really should be asking when you go to design, buy, install, and then manage your very first network. So what we want to do is we want to give people the basic knowledge, what you need to know before you go out and buy a bunch of equipment that may or may not do what you want it to do. That's Networking 101.
Yeah, totally. And like a lot of the stuff that we're going over, I have like a recollection of.
Right.
I have like a vague remembrance of things, but it's always good to kind of get back into it and relearn.
Precisely. Like last week, we talked all about routing, how routing actually works on the internet. Now, we've heard about it. We kind of know that the internet is a self-healing network. We understand that packets bounce from one place to the next. But last week, and you're going to go want to watch that episode if you didn't get it, we kind of explained how it actually works. How does a router know where to send the next packet? How does it know what happens to the traffic that's passing on its own network?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to do for last week's episode, kind of the ivory tower idea.
Right.
This week, we're all practical.
We're going to set up one, right?
We're going to set up one. Specifically, we're going to be using this. Because remember, at the end of last week's episode, we took a look at the Synology. This is the RT2600 AC. This is the new version, the new hotness.
Ooh, she's pretty.
She is so pretty. This is, again, it's one of my favorite picks just because I love the Synology ecosystem. I love the fact that it basically runs like their NAS products, and I love their NAS products. We're going to be using this as sort of the basis of the information we're dropping on you, but know that pretty much all the functions are duplicated no matter who you buy the router from, unless it's a really, really bad router.
And if so, you should feel bad.
You should feel bad. Yeah, there are some routers that have absolutely no setup. You plug it in and it works.
Right. That's bad.
That's bad. You kind of want control. You want a little bit of fine control so that you can do the things that you need to do to make it work for you, not just for them.
Quick question.
Yeah.
So, say I've had a router for a long time. Like, what's the average cycle of replacing a router? Is it just, I need better Wi-Fi access or something, then I'll replace it? Or is it like every 3 or 4 years I should probably get a new one? Or?
No, that's the thing. When we're talking about the enterprise, which is where most of my expertise comes from. That's actually my other show, This Week in Enterprise Tech.
You do another
every
show?
Every Friday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific time.
Wait, you do other shows on this network?
I've been cheating on you, Brian. I'm sorry.
I'm hurt now.
I know, right? No, but when we talk about the enterprise, typically we base our equipment replacement on the lease or the license cycle. So, for example, if I have a big router that I've purchased from HP, they may only support that for 3 to 5 years.
Right.
And then it doesn't make sense for me to keep it because if I ever need to have it serviced, it's going to cost more progressively than it would for me to have new equipment. So, for example, when I was still working with Interrupt, we refreshed our equipment every year. It just made more sense. It was more economically viable for us to do it that way. You don't have that problem when you're at home. You
know, right.
Yeah, you bought your router. You're not leasing it. You don't need to pay someone to come in to fix it. At least I hope you don't. and so, I mean, you can hold on to that. I have routers in my inventory that I bought 20 years ago.
Okay.
They're not good anymore.
Yeah,
I use them for experiments. Eventually, what will happen is you'll notice that, okay, it's not as fast as it should be, or more likely, because, I mean, 10-100 is still fast for plenty of people around the country, around the world.
Right.
It's the feature set. It's like, I this hasn't had firmware that's been updated for 15 years. Okay, maybe you shouldn't use that.
Okay, because for me, like, it's the pain threshold. You know, like, I have a router that's been kicked around since I was a poor student, my first apartment, and I think my little brother's using it right now. And it's just, like, I couldn't tolerate anymore. I think I bought it refurbished for $50 back in the day, and it was an old Linksys one.
Yeah, and, okay, and here's a public service announcement. If you are using a router that's more than 5 years old, and the firmware has not been updated for more than 5 years, at least Google the model number of that router, because there's a good chance that it's been owned.
Yeah.
And by owning, I mean someone developed an exploit for that particular firmware, and the company may have just said, it's old, forget it, we'll do the patch on the newer ones.
Right.
If you have one of those devices, you will at some point, it's not maybe, you will get owned. Someone will use a toolkit that automatically goes down IP ranges on the internet looking for those particular vulnerable routers, owns it, and now you belong to him or her.
So would you recommend putting DDWRT on it then?
Yeah.
Because that's something we've talked about in the past.
Anything you can do to upgrade the firmware, that's awesome. And if the company they refuse to update their firmware and you can put DDWRT on it, great. I also have another box filled with routers that are no longer fit to go on the internet.
What do you mean not fit to go on the
internet? Well, like from Netgear, from D-Link, the ones that have basically had their firmware abandoned.
Oh.
And there's a major exploit, like super easy to exploit. I'll use them in the lab anytime I want to demonstrate the exploit, but I will never put them on the internet again.
Okay. They've been retired.
They have been retired.
All right, I guess we should probably set one up then.
Yeah. Well, that's why I like this 2600, because Synology has been very good in fact, if you go to my computer right now, Alex, if you go to my control panel, they've got a brand new firmware available for this. And I love this. Look how slick this interface is. I'm zooming. You don't zoom. I zoom. but they've got an automatic update.
Yes, driver is the Synology 1900, which, you know, it doesn't really matter what the hardware is because the software looks exactly the same. And the best part is that I just have it set to update like at 3 o'clock in the morning whenever it needs to. And it sends me a little warning, but.
I do the manual update because I kind of want to read through. It's not that I don't trust them. I actually want to see what they updated.
Right.
But what it will do is this will actually send me, not this one. This one's not set up. The one I have in my lab is set up so when I receive an update, it will text me and say, hey, I got this update, and then I'll go home and I'll go ahead and apply it.
Right.
But they are constantly developing firmware. That's what you want. You want a company that's invested enough in their product that they're going to continue to patch those vulnerabilities and, in the case of Synology, add a couple of features. They've got enough hot firepower in here so they can do things.
Right. And the most important thing to me is my service has never been interrupted, so it keeps patching itself and updating, and I don't have to think twice about it.
Although there will be that time where you're surfing the internet at 3 in the morning watching some weird anime thing, and suddenly it just stops, and you're like, Synology!
It's time to go to bed, is what it's telling me.
All right, let's go ahead and jump in. The first thing you're going to want to do, because you most likely already have a network, collect information from your existing network. That's always important. You want to do that. Even if you end up not using it because you're completely redoing your scheme, you want to know what your old settings were in case you have to go back to them.
Right.
So let me show you a really easy way. If you're using Windows, this is how you would do it. If you're using a OS X, I think it's if switch or something. I can find the command for you, but there's always a parallel. Alex, if you go to my computer really quickly. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to drop down into a command shell like so.
Oh, this is some real hacker stuff.
This
here.
Is not hacker stuff, actually. And actually, you got to get in on that because.
Well, like, when you see green text like that, you're like, "Oh, he's deep diving into the
hacking,
system."
Hacking. That's how. Okay, so simple command. It's IP config, and what I'm asking is for the configuration of the IP stack, and this is what it gives me. So I know that right now my Ethernet address is 10.1.14.116. That's the actual address of my computer. Mm-hmm. I know my subnet mask, and that tells the router how many addresses it can hand out.
Right.
255.255.255.0.
So that's pretty standard to see.
Right. It has 256 addresses, minus one because it's itself, and
right.
minus another one because it doesn't hand out zero, and minus another one because it doesn't hand out 255.
Right.
And then I also have, if I do this, ipconfig all, I get a more verbose explanation, and this is really where it's going to come in handy. If you look at this, not only do I get my address of my adapter, not only do I get my subnet mask, but I get my default gateway, I get my DHCP server, which is probably going to be the same, but not always, and I also get my DNS server, which is probably going to be the same, but not always.
Okay.
So that is the basic information that you want to write down. Again, you may not use it. You may just wipe it out completely.
Mm-hmm.
But if anything happens and you have issues, at least you have that information written down so you can enter it in and get back on the internet and then figure out what you did wrong.
Okay. That makes sense.
One of the biggest complaints I have is people say, well, I started watching the X tutorial and then I changed the settings and I couldn't get back to the tutorial because the internet wasn't working. I'm like,
right.
Okay.
It's a catch-22 kind of thing.
Yeah. All right. So, once we have that information, now we want to think about how we want to configure our new router's addressing scheme. This is actually really important. You can head off so many issues if you put a little bit of thought into how many devices you're going to have, how you want to address them, and where they're going to be kept.
Okay.
All right. So, for example, right now we've logged into our router. This is our interface here. We want to find the settings for network setup. And again, this is on a Synology 2600, but you're going to find a similar setting in any router that you go to. In this particular case, I'm going to the network center, and then I'm going to my local network. This is where I can set. I'm going to zoom in here for you because I like you guys. This is where I can set what my network is going to look like. I know my router has been set for the address of 10.1.14.1. That is what's called a non-routable address. You can't actually put that on the internet.
Right.
There have been certain addresses starting with 10 or starting with 192 that are reserved. They can't be used as routable addresses because you want to be able to use them inside of a NAT.
Okay.
This particular one chose 10 because my network at home was using 192 and I was NATing a NAT. So it didn't want to, you can't use the same address for consecutive networks, right? So it's
right.
not like I can't have 192.168.1.1 connected to 192.168.1.1. Otherwise, the traffic will never know exactly where it's supposed to go.
That makes sense.
Okay. So I've chosen an IP address that is not being used by anything else. But this also tells me that because I'm using this subnet of 255.255.255.0, that the addresses it will hand out start with 10.1.14.2 and go all the way up to 254.
Okay.
That is my range. That's what I can use.
That's a lot.
That's not what I should use.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Because remember we talked about DHCP last week?
Right.
And how hard it was when we didn't have DHCP because you kind of had to remember where all your devices were and write them down.
And then there's the chain of computers that if you like unhooked one of them and the whole system would... You couldn't
so you're thinking of Token Ring. That was
it.
That was good
ring.
Stuff.
Yeah.
That was good stuff, I'll tell you. I wish I had some Token Ring right now. But no, what we want to do is we want a range where it will hand out addresses. Mm-hmm. We also want a range where it won't hand out addresses. And the reason why I want that range where it doesn't hand out addresses is that's where I'm going to put my static devices.
That's where I put my Xbox.
Precisely. And a static device is wonderful. There are ways you can set up a table in this router and most other routers where you say, this device will always be given this address. So it's kind of like a static address but handed out by DHCP.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nice, but I'm kind of old school. If I swap out the router, I don't want to have to reset that up. If I give it a static address, it will always be at that address.
Mm-hmm.
We'll show you that when we get further into the lessons. But essentially, every device as long as it's not horrible, has the ability to either choose a DHCP address, so make that request to get an address from the router, or from the gateway, or I can enter in manually a number that it owns or it thinks it owns.
Exactly.
Problem is, though, and remember we talked about this last week, if I put two devices on the same address, It will conflict, mm-hmm. and basically whichever device is screaming the loudest gets the traffic.
Right.
So don't do that.
Yeah, that would not be fun.
All right, so if you go back to my screen, as you can see, the DHCP server has been enabled. It's going to start at 10.1.14.2, and it's going to end at 10.1.14.128. It's not really what I want. I kind of like round numbers. I like to know exactly where it's going to be put. So what I'm going to say is I'm going to go from 51 to 100.
Okay.
What I've just told it is to do 100 addresses.
Isn't that 49 addresses?
Shh.
Oh.
Stop with the math.
Okay.
I like it that way. But this tells me, okay, anything that's DHCP, and honestly, I don't have that many DHCP devices. It's just me, with my laptop, my phone, so I'm probably not going to hit 50. This network is pretty much just for me. What this does is it frees up everything else for static addresses.
Okay.
Yeah. And in my particular case, I prefer to have either my static addresses all the way down, mm-hmm. like near the gateway. So it would be 10.1.14.2 through 49.
Right. And that's just easier for you to keep track of then?
Easier for me to keep track of, because I know then all the stuff that's below 50, mm-hmm. don't touch.
Right.
Like, don't ever put an address down there. And then I also have a range above 100, all the way up to 254, where I could put other stuff. But I don't, because that's messy.
Okay. Can you static route wireless devices, too?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, so anything that has a stack, a network stack, mm-hmm. I can hand it an address and say, use this address. Don't ask for DHCP. Just use this address. In fact, let me show you exactly how that works. Alex, if you go to my computer, so what I'm going to do is, I've turned off my wireless. Let me turn that back on. Ta-da! And then I need to go here. So this is Windows 10. This is my wired network. What I would do is I would go into my stack, which is right here for TCP IP. This is IP version 4. Hmm. Right now, it's obtaining an IP address and a DNS server automatically.
Right.
Which is nice, because it means I don't have to do any of the setup. Mm-hmm. But, and this is the way we used to always have to do this, I could specify an address. So, for example, in our example, I just made everything below 50 static. So I could mm-hmm. put 10 dot, was it 14.1?
Yeah.
.1.2. I could make it 2. 255.255.255.0. And again, this is why it's good to write down all your settings. And then my default gateway is 10.14.1.1. And instead of using the default DNS server, I could use my personal favorite, which is 8.8.8.8 with
Google,
or my other personal favorite, 208.67.220.220, which is OpenDNS.
OpenDNS, yeah.
Yeah. So this setting would work, and I can do this for wired or wireless. I probably wouldn't do it on a computer that I transport back and forth.
Right.
Between the studio and my home.
Because then once you got to the studio, it wouldn't work.
Right. I have to set it back. But for example, like my desktop is a static address. It doesn't move anywhere.
Okay.
My screens that's set up at home, mm-hmm. that's a static address. That's never going to move. It's never going anywhere.
Right.
And that way I always know where it is. My security cameras, all static.
Right.
Again, because I don't want to guess where they are. I don't want them hopping around. Mm-hmm. It also means that I was able to put a rule into the router so that those are the only cameras that can access the Synology NAS box that's acting as the digital video recorder.
Okay, that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, because for me, I have the Xbox set to a static route, but that's because there's certain ports that I have open that I only want for that IP address, not
exactly.
for my whole network.
And we will be handling ports, I think it's either next week or the week after.
Okay.
It's super important, and people need, and it's one of those things that people kind of get,
yeah.
but typically what they'll do is they'll get it working, and then just, okay, it's fine. And even though it's not actually set up properly.
Well, like I was telling you about that old router that I used to have.
I know what you did.
Set the DMZ.
DMZ, yeah, yep. Don't ever. Bad, Brian.
It was bad idea.
All right, if you go back to my screen, some other things here. By the way, I don't have to have .1. The gateway doesn't have to be .1.
Right.
The gateway can be any address in that range.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I would only use .1 or .254. I like to have it on either end. I don't want the gateway to be in the middle. That's just weird addressing.
Yeah.
You could.
That bugs you, huh?
It bugs me. But, I mean, if you wanted to,
you could
do it wrong.
It's your network. You could do it wrong. You're so OCD about stuff.
I am kind of OCD. All right, another thing here. Lease time. This is actually very important. The way DHCP works is, because remember, we talked about how it's a process. It's a device jumping on the network saying, hey, I'd like an address. Where's the DHCP server? And the DHCP server says, I'm the DHCP server. Here's an address. Would you like it? And then the client acknowledges it and says, yay, I'll take
that.
And
then there's the handshake, right?
Yeah, they're all happy.
Yay.
Well, along with that, there's a lease time. And the lease time means check back with me in X time.
Hmm.
That's important because that lease is not perpetual. It's not forever. And it shouldn't be forever for
Why
one simple
not?
Reason. You'd run out of addresses.
But if it's set to the same device.
But think about this. If you had a network that had an unlimited lease time, at some point, and remember, I only have 50 addresses. At some point, you're probably going to have more than 50 devices that connect to your network.
That's true, like over a course of...
Right, because we're talking about it never expires. So it could be like the device that came in once, like you brought in a new phone and then you sent it away.
Okay.
It still has a lease. It's still taking up space. Eventually, you'd run out of addresses.
That makes sense.
Right.
So what's an average lease time then? Doesn't matter. There is no average.
It depends on what you want. So a DHCP request does slow down your network. Because the server, which is also my gateway, has to respond to it. So I don't want the lease time so low that it's always. Like, I don't say 60 seconds. Ask me every minute. Well, if I have 200 devices in my network and they're asking every minute, that's basically all that gateway's going to do.
Right. And then you just shut down. The network shuts down.
It just shuts it down. I also don't want it so long that I start running out of address space. So typically what we'll do is we'll play with it. And if we start to see that the reserve of unused addresses gets a little bit too low, we'll go, okay, decrease the lease time.
Huh.
Or if we see that the network activity is way too high because of all the DHCP requests, we'll increase lease time. But just know that this is something that you absolutely control. In our particular case, if you go back to my screen, Alex, it's 86,400 seconds. So every 86,400 seconds, a client that has received a DHCP address will ask the router, can I still have this lease?
86,400 seconds.
Are you doing the math for me, Brian?
I can't do it in my head.
Oh,
I was going to do the
so
calculator.
Nice. It's very, very cute. Now, this is something that you have control over, and that's why you should know. If you are absolutely paranoid about other devices being on your network, set a low lease time. If you don't care, set a high lease time.
Okay.
Are you okay with that?
I am okay with that. So that's 1,440 minutes.
It's not bad.
It's like a day. That's a day, yeah. All right, that makes sense.
Okay.
So every day it will renew the lease on any device on the network, I guess?
Yeah. Well, any device that has asked for a DHCP address.
Okay.
But remember, it's not like it asks for them all.
Yeah.
Every time a client gets an address, it gets its own lease time.
Okay.
So it's staggered. It's whenever they connect it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I get it. Does my face look like it's melting off right now?
No, this is good stuff. Oh, folks, when we come back, it's time to look at wireless. Yes, I know. We spent some time on routing, and we've shown you some basic setup, but we got to jump into wireless because wireless is one of these things that everybody loves, everyone wants to play with, but everyone needs to understand how it actually works.
Oh, and it's so nice with the new routers and stuff, too.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that.
But before we do that, first, these messages. Now, folks, look, I understand that you have a lot of things to do. You got a lot of cares on your mind, a lot of worries, as it were. And sometimes that affects your sleep. But sleep is so important. More and more, we are proving that if you don't get the right number of hours of sleep every night, if you don't get the right amount of restful hours of sleep, if you don't take the time to make sure that you're in that relaxed mode where your brain can actually dump out all the stuff it doesn't need, you're going to have a terrible day. Not only does it affect your mood, it also affects your productivity. It just makes you not the person that you want to be, which is why we're so happy to have Casper as a sponsor of Know How, because they get the science of sleep. Now, Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. They're revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms by passing the savings directly to the consumer. Casper mattresses are obsessively engineered mattresses at a fair price. They're made of supportive memory foams for a sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. Plus, it's got a breathable design that helps you to sleep cool and helps you regulate your temperature throughout the night. No more waking up sweating or waking up cold. It's just got that nice, warm, fuzzy feeling all over. And really, isn't that what we all want in a mattress? A Casper mattress provides long-lasting comfort and support, and you can buy it easily online and completely risk-free. Now, we got our new Casper mattresses and tried them out. It's so soft and comfortable because they understand the importance of truly trying out a mattress that, in all reality, you spend a third of your life on. Now, imagine that. Seriously, a third. A third of your life is spent on something that sometimes some people put no thought into whatsoever. It's time we ended the tyranny of bad sleep. Casper offers free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period, so you don't have to lie down in a showroom. They'll deliver it to your home. You can deploy it in the area that you're actually going to be sleeping and know for yourself, really, what a Casper mattress feels like. Folks, Casper mattresses uphold the highest environmental production standards and are made in the United States of America, as they've always been. Free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. You owe it to yourself to get a better night's sleep. Get a Casper mattress today. You can save an additional $50 towards a mattress purchase by going to casper.com/knowhow. That's casper.com/knowhow and entering the promo code knowhow. Again, that's casper.com/knowhow with the promo code knowhow. Terms and conditions apply, and we thank Casper for their support of knowhow. Okay, Brian, so we've played with the basic router setup. Now we need to play with wireless. Now remember, back in my day,
yeah,
when we were networking with strings and cups.
That's right.
You know, back then, APs, access points, were actually separate from the router.
So it was like a little box?
It was an add-on. It was something that you connected to your network that essentially extended the wires.
Right, because back in the day, everything was modular, right? Like, everything we've talked about wasn't all in the same box like it
Precisely.
Is now. Yeah.
So, like, what I had was a cable terminal device that got me into the network. Mm-hmm. I had my router, which I connected to my terminal device. And then I had an AP that it connected into my switch, which was connected to my router. And that's how we built things. But now, it's all in one box. You might have the cable modem / router / AP / switch / firewall all in one device. That's not bad, but you have to understand that they're actually different devices.
Okay, so now we're going to get into the wireless.
Wireless, the AP.
And there's multiple kinds of wireless.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's the 2.4 gigahertz, there's the 5 gigahertz, different bands.
And we're going to talk exactly
guest networks.
What that means, precisely. We want all of that good stuff because your router, even if you bought the economical model that we suggested last week, the Asus one, they all support this, and you need to know why it works the way it works. Okay, the first thing you're going to want to do, and we're going to jump into our settings here, Alex, if you jump over. WPS, okay, we've talked about this a lot on the Twit TV network. Turn this off.
What?
It is so full. WPS, it's an easy way for people to set up their devices where you push a button. That's actually right on the side here of the router. And then you can, as long as you're there to say, yeah, this is what I want.
This is me.
This is me. Yeah. It was a good idea. It was an interesting idea of...
People do bad things.
People do bad things with this. WPS was cracked a long time ago. It's very easy to exploit it. So if you
what
know, go to
my
screen.
What does it stand for?
This is the Wi-Fi protected setup.
Oh, okay.
So what I can do is I can put my phone or my laptop into WPS mode, and then it will say, push the button on your router. And if you push the button, it knows that you are authorized, and it will share its key with you.
Okay.
Which, again, sounds like a great idea, except... Really.
Not in practice, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's off.
Turn it off. WPS, turn it off. If you have a router that doesn't allow you to turn off WPS,
throw that router out of the window.
Throw it away. Yeah. that's not good. The other thing you want to do, and this is important because you may have friends that you don't trust. In fact, you should never trust any of your friends ever.
You should trust some of your friends less than you trust strangers.
And even the friend I trust the most, they still get the guest network.
And considering during the ad break, I was trying to get into the router so I could mess with some of the settings.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. So what we're going to do is turn on a guest network. And again, both the Synology and that Asus that we suggested, they both support guest networks. And what guest networks will do is they will allow us to do this.
Boom.
AP isolation. AP isolation is awesome because it basically means that, well, first of all, I have a guest network. So it's separate from my network. I could put Brick House Guest.
Right.
And when they log into that, they get access to the internet.
But they don't have any access to the router
itself. They see nothing else.
Yeah, that's cool.
They don't
cool.
see the router. They see nothing none of the network. Not even the other guest devices. It's called AP isolation.
Yeah.
Now, this is supported on the Synology. I don't think it's supported on the Asus. But the Asus does have a guest network option, so it segments you off from the main network at least.
Right.
But when they log into the guest network, the only thing they can see is the internet. I love that. That is an incredible feature because, again, you know, friends come over to the house, they're going to ask for Wi-Fi. That's yes. what they do. And have you ever had that moment where you're like, you're holding the pizza on the beer, you're like,
the password is...
I don't know if I want to give this to you because I'm going to have to change it later on, but I might be too drunk to change it. Am I forgetting you're going to have my password forever and you might do bad things? You know that conversation
yes,
you have in your head?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. This way you can say, yeah, the guest password is monkey123.
Right.
Oh, and by the way, you can only access the internet.
And, well, can't you also set, like, bandwidth limits and stuff,
yes.
too?
Because, yes.
oh, this friend that comes over loves to pirate movies right. when he comes onto so my network.
You get yeah. 1 kilobit per second. Enjoy.
Yeah.
Okay, and what I like about the Synology is it allows me to turn on either 2.4 or 5 gig or both.
Right.
And you know, I can also, this is kind of cool, I really, really
yes.
like this, I can expire it. So if mm-hmm. I'm having that party, I can say, okay, yeah, you can have access to my guest network, but by the way, this is going to auto-expire.
You get an hour. And yeah. then you have to buy me another beer.
And then you have to bring over some chips.
Yeah, exactly.
So turn off WPS, turn on guest network. And if you have guest network and it supports AP isolation, absolutely turn on AP isolation.
Okay.
One quick note of this, though. If you're giving them your network so that they can access something you have on your network, like
right.
you have a NAS and they want to see what movies you've got.
Or what if you want to do like a LAN party or something?
Yeah, yeah. Then you can't do that. Yeah. You have to give them the actual password or wire them in because that AP isolation means they're don't see anything.
That's mm-hmm. the feature. That makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So we've got that. Now let's go on to something else. We need to know the difference between 2.4 and 5 gigahertz. You
yes.
brought this up. This is actually really, really important. If you go to my overhead here, Alex, this is a tool that we've used a lot on this network. This is Wi-Fi Analyzer. And actually, I'm going to do it here. So what you see now is a representation of what the 2.4 gigahertz spectrum looks like. This is a free tool on Android. So and it, you know, I've had this forever. It's an absolutely essential part of my toolkit. You'll notice that most of them converge around channel 1, channel 6, and channel 11. That's because those are the only actual channels, the only
right.
non-overlapping channels. And all that stuff that's not on those channels, like know-how right now.
that's going over, that's, yeah.
You see how it does that? That's bad. We don't want that because what it's doing is it's basically acting like a signal jammer to all that other stuff.
Right. Because, okay, I think we've talked about this before, but there really are only three channels, even though you
in 2.4, yeah.
In 2.4, even though you have the option to set it to, what, like 1 through 13
right.
or something.
You only, if there's only one thing you walk away from this episode with, is only choose 1, 6, and 11
okay.
in 2.4 gigahertz. Anything else... Not only are you ticking off anyone who knows how to set up a wireless who might be near you,
yeah.
but you're actually jamming your own devices.
Okay.
Okay. That's it's just not actually. Hold on. Look, I've got a kickstand.
What?
Ooh. There we go. So yeah, this is 2.4, and it gets really crowded. 2.4 is nice because it's a lower frequency. It penetrates pretty well. It goes through walls.
Right.
But I have all this congestion problem.
Right.
Look what
so
happens.
If you're like, well, our studio is congested, but if you're like in an apartment building or something, most people use 2.4.
Yeah. This is the 5 gigahertz spectrum.
Oh, hi.
And the nice thing about the 5 gigahertz spectrum is, if I can get this, look how big and empty it is.
Right.
There's so many more channels in 5 gigahertz that, it's not funny. You have three non-overlapping channels in 2.4 gigahertz. There are 23 non-overlapping channels in the 5 gigahertz range. Now, we should note that it's a higher frequency.
So the trade-off is less penetration through like walls and stuff like
that? Precisely. You do get faster speeds, though. The mm-hmm. higher data rates, but the penetration's not as good. So it doesn't go through walls quite as well. It doesn't go through windows quite as well.
Right.
So just know that. But that couldn't be a good thing. We're going to talk about that in the third segment. Hmm. It's not a bad thing to have signal that's attenuated easily.
Right, because you don't want someone who's sitting like far away from your network being able to kind of like get access to it.
Yeah.
Like outside of your walls.
Yeah, precisely. Mm-hmm. And also because it gives you options to build out your network in a different way. If you can count on, say, like the center dividing wall to
yeah.
block out the 2.4 gigahertz signal
mm-hmm.
and the 5 gigahertz signal, obviously.
Right. Now, I'm trying to imagine my apartment. I have a Chromecast that's really close to the router. So I could probably set that to 5 gigahertz because it's streaming, you know, like HD video all the time. Without it then I could put other devices on my 2.4 that are further away, and they won't have the traffic interference, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now, something else that you're going to want to take a look at, if you go back to my screen. Synology does something that a lot of other manufacturers do. Apple, Asus, they have got an auto selection. And the whole idea is it's going to automate the process for you to make it easier, right?
Oh,
yay!
Yeah.
But this is the reason why that big curve from the know-how router is sitting over a huge chunk.
Yeah.
It's because it's looked at the wireless and it's basically said, mine.
So selfish.
Yeah. So I typically turn that off because it allows me to set exactly what I want. So I can set my SSID individually, like know-how or know-how 5G.
Yep.
The other thing is, you'll see this a lot. People used to use this as a security feature. You can turn off the SSID.
So it doesn't pop up
when
an available network.
It's not beaconing.
Yeah.
But the problem is it's still there, and it's not a security thing. So it's like anyone who's actually looking for your network
will find
still
it.
Find it.
Yeah.
All it really does is tick off the people who were supposed to be on your network.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, don't do that. The other thing is security level, you're going to want to use WPA2.
Right.
Don't use
WEP.
Anything else. Yeah, WEP is gone. In fact, yeah, WEP doesn't even exist in this anymore.
It's right above WPA.
Oh, wait,
can.
Oh, sorry.
I guess it's there as an option, but don't use it.
If you want to see how fast your network can get cracked, choose WEP. Choose WEP. Yeah,
okay.
WPA2. And then you can also choose your modes.
Right. So A is a band, N is a band, and AC isn't that.
Well, those are different types of protocols. So
okay.
802.11a was the original 5 gigahertz protocol. Mm-hmm. Then you also had B, which operated in the 2.4 gigahertz.
Right.
Then you had G and N, which could kind of do both. G was mostly 2.4. N could do both.
Right.
And now you have AC, which can operate in both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz. Uh-huh. And AC also has the ability to basically use more of it.
Right.
Like,
right,
I can
right.
use multiple channels. In this particular case, I can use 4 channels at the same time. I can bond them together and get crazy fast data rates. But it also means I'm now taking up a bigger chunk of spectrum.
Okay. Cool.
Cool.
I get that.
Are we good?
We're good. I'm remembering back to when N like came out, and it was like I had a router that could do N. I was like, oh,
yeah,
nice.
Or draft N. This is another thing. Channel width. Increasing the channel width sounds great because, you know, I increased the amount of space that my broadcast can take.
Yeah.
And that's fine on 5 gigahertz, but when I do it on 2.4 gigahertz, again, I'm now taking up all those channels. There's only 3. So stop doing that. Don't do that. And you're going to want to disable the auto channel, especially on the 2.4 gigahertz, because when I do that, see how it chose 5?
Right.
And actually, Apple's Airport Expresses are famous for doing this. They'll always choose some weird channel where there's no other traffic, but it does now mean that it's overlapping. I mean, that's what this graph was all about.
Okay.
On the little Wi-Fi analyzer. So
the cool thing about Wi-Fi Analyzer, too, I think, I don't remember where it was exactly in the settings, but you can go into it and it'll look at all the different networks and what
right.
bands they're taking up, and it'll suggest which one you might want to take.
Precisely. But if you come back to my screen, 1, 6, and 11.
Yes.
Those are the only ones you choose.
Good.
Okay. Repeat after me, folks.
1, 6, 11.
And
11. Got
1, 6,
it.
And 11. If you choose any other, Crankkeeper will come over to your house and unplug your router.
I'll do it. I'll find you. I have a certain set of skills, and it comes to routers.
Oh, by the way, there is another cool thing that I would do this just to... I was thinking about doing this to my parents.
What's that?
You can enable a schedule, which will, like, turn on and off the access points at certain times.
Do it to your parents? Because you want those phone calls?
Dad, because my dad, he plays poker in bed for, like, 3 hours every night. And I would just... cut him off. It's like, hey, you know what? At midnight, you should stop playing poker, Dad.
And then that's when you're going to get the phone call. Hey, Bobby, why is the internet not working? Did you touch the router again? Oh, wait, no, I scheduled so you couldn't.
Yeah.
That is cool,
It's designed for kids. It's when you have kids, you can... And actually, that's a good idea. You know,
yeah.
Say, after midnight, you don't get Wi-Fi anymore. Go
right.
to bed.
Right.
Of course, you were tweeting me at...
I'm not going to do it to myself. No way. Yeah.
Okay, so that's some of the basic wireless stuff. When we come back, you want to look at some crazier wireless stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to
Because if there's anything I like about wireless, it's getting crazy.
Cray, cray. Mm-hmm. We're going to get cray, cray in just a bit. But first, we got a few more messages. This time, I want to talk to you about not losing your stuff. Folks, we all know that pain. You know, when you've got that device you love, you're carrying it with you. It's shiny, it's bright, it's new. Maybe you've taken it out for the first time to a coffee shop because you wanted to show some friends. You go up to get your latte and you turn around and it's gone. Now, did you lose it? Did you misplace it? Is it in your pocket? Or did someone just run off with your crazy new fantastic, shiny, fantabulous device? Well, folks, if you want to stop that anxiety, if you want to make sure you always know where all your coolest gear is, what you need is a tracker. The tracker is the best way to make sure that all of your devices stay with you, that you always know where everything is. See, it's a coin-sized device that attaches to the things that you treasure the most, and it lets you find them under the couch, in the cupboard, on the table, or in your bag. Your meeting is in 20 minutes, and you can't find your keys. Well, with the tracker, you can with just the flick of a button on your phone. Now, the Tracker Bravo is a coin-sized device constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking device ever. It helps you to locate those misplaced keys, your wallet, your bags, your computers, anything you might attach it to. You just pair Tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and find its precise location with the tap of a button. It's that easy. Now, if you lose your phone, you could even use reverse tracking. If you know where your tracker is, you press a button on the back of the tracker, and your phone will start to ring even if it's set to silent. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once, and you can customize two-way separation alerts so that as you, say, move away from that shiny new device in the coffee shop, it gives you a little buzz, a little vibrate, a little ring to let you know, hey, did you wanna let me get away from you? Because I'm losing signal. Now, with over 4.5 million devices shipped, Tracker has one more huge advantage, and that is you don't actually have to be in range of your tracker to know where it is. Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item will show up on a map, even if it's miles away, even if it's halfway around the world. The Tracker app records its last known location, and when another Tracker user comes within 100 feet of your item, you receive a GPS update of where your item is located. It's the best way to make sure that you're always connected. And with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no reason not to give it a try. If you're tired of losing your gear, if you're tired of having your gear taken, if you're tired of the anxiety of not knowing where everything is that you need at every moment of every day, then you need a tracker. Stop losing your stuff today. Go to thetracker.com and enter the promo code KNOWHOW. You'll get a free Tracker Bravo with any order. Again, that's thetracker, thetracker.com, promo code KNOWHOW for your free Tracker Bravo with any order. Tracker. Never lose your stuff again. And we thank Tracker for their support of Know How. All right, so we talked a little bit about basic router setup.
Right.
We talked a little bit about basic wireless, and really basic wireless. I mean, we're not getting into any of the fun stuff. We're just talking about this is how you would want to bring it up. You know, know your device, your network's routing scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Know what kind of security you've set for your wireless. Turn on things like guest networks.
Turn on API.
Turn off WPS. Now let's talk about a couple of things that people will have when they're using wireless in a more advanced way. We actually had a tweet from a viewer. Ryan, what's he say?
Okay, so Mark tweeted us and he asked, I have a work project that requires 500 devices on a test bench that all need to be on to Wi-Fi. Willing to talk possibilities? That's a lot of devices.
That's a lot
to
of devices.
Be on Wi-Fi.
Yeah, obviously, totally atypical. You're not often going to find 500 devices on a table that you're going to need to connect. But it sounds like he's trying to do some sort of theoretical max experiment, or he's got to prove to someone that you can have 500 devices at the same time.
Okay.
Now, there's a couple of different ways to do it. The first way would be one of my favorites, and that is with an array. We used to have these on the network a lot. Xeris has kind of changed over the years, so I haven't really pushed them because they lost a lot of their really, really good engineers. It's still a fantastic idea. If you go to the overhead shot, the idea of this is not actually a Wi-Fi radio. This is several Wi-Fi radios. This is called an array.
Are you looking for these
there
little
we
guys?
Go. Yeah, this is what they... Inside, what you have is you have a series of these things. These are actually both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz radios that are set up in this little antenna thing. So what it's doing is it's dividing the 360-degree slice around the array into little chunks that are owned by that particular set.
That makes sense.
It's very, very efficient use of bandwidth because it basically means I can run the same channels in this radio and this radio without them interfering with each other because the waveguides keep that signal from actually conflicting.
Okay. Well, so when I was at first reading this question, I was thinking of, like, in a home setup, why would you ever want 500 devices? But 500 actually doesn't sound like that much if you're going to, like, a convention.
Precisely.
Or, like, a sports stadium or something like
that. And that's what this is set up for. So these are set up for, like, Moscone Center, where you would put them up in the roof, and they would, I mean, not just 500. You might be serving out thousands of devices.
Right.
And with an array like this that can actually divide the workload between radios, 500 is not a problem.
Okay.
In fact, I think this one, and this is old, by the way. This is like a six-year-old unit.
Huh.
This one, I think, can serve 600 or 700 units. I've got a more modern one. This is one from Ruckus.
But how well does it vacuum is what I want to know.
Yeah, I should totally turn it to a Roomba. So this is a Ruckus unit, and I think this one can serve, realistically, you can probably hang about 80 devices off of this. But
that's
you can use
good.
Multiple.
So that's like something we'd use here at the office, then.
Precisely.
Okay.
Yeah, and actually, we use these all over my campus back in San Francisco.
Okay.
And Ruckus does have a different business model. You do use them for the controller, but it's still good stuff. Now, he's probably not going to want to shell out the money for these because these.
Yeah. What would this one cost? I mean, I know it's older, but what? All right. What did it cost at the time, and then what would it cost now? I guess.
I think this one was $1,000 a radio, so that's like a $4,000 array.
And then how many of those would you have at, like, Interop? Like 100?
No, like 50.
Oh, 50, okay.
Yeah, but the Interop's huge.
I mean, yeah, that's a big deal.
We went for overkill. He's going to want to do something a little bit different because he's probably doesn't have the budget to spend that much money on an enterprise device.
Yeah.
And it's very counterintuitive, but this is good for everyone. This is why I love this question.
Okay.
Sometimes you get better results by turning down the power.
But?
I know, right?
Turning down the power? If you, that's never the case.
Jump back to my screen here, Alex. There is a setting, and again, all routers with AP functionality should have this. If it doesn't, DDWRT definitely does, so upgrade your firmware. And that is this, transmit power. Now, it's going to seem weird. People are going to like, wait a minute, why would I decrease the amount of power? If I'm going to have that many devices, I need more power, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
No. Because you have to remember anytime I'm dealing with RF, the amount of interference that I generate is way more than the amount of usable signal-to-noise that I can generate.
Okay.
It's the same idea of like with radar. Mm-hmm. If I turn on a radar, I can see things out to a certain distance, but people can see my radar sweeps out to that distance times two.
Okay.
Okay. With RF signal from my 2.4 or 5 gigahertz radios, I have a usable range of, say, oh, I don't know, let's call it 30 feet. Mm-hmm. But that signal will emanate out to 100 feet and will disrupt devices out to 100 feet, even though I can no longer communicate with those devices.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess the way I always imagine it is like ripples in water.
Yeah.
You know?
So you're making a lot of really big ripples, which might work out to a certain extent. But the problem is, remember, these devices have to talk back to me.
They have to bounce it back. Yeah.
Yeah. And if they can't talk back to me, then it doesn't make sense for me to be yelling.
Right.
You know, one person yelling in a room is annoying.
Right.
40 people yelling in a room is cacophony. You can't hear anything.
Right.
So paradoxically, if you have a lot of devices, the key is not to turn the power up. The key is to turn the power down and use more devices.
Okay. Yeah, because there's less interruption. There's less disturbance.
So what I can do is, if you go back to my screen, I can turn my power all the way down and then use two or three of these things. Rather than one trying to scream to all 500 devices, I can set three units at the lowest power possible, set them apart, so that different units will want to connect to different APs.
Right.
And that works a whole heck of a lot better. It's so, so much better. In fact, this is one of those things that we always had to go around at the convention centers, and we'd have to talk to the booth owners and say, look, I know you think there's a lot of interference, but if you turn your radios up, they're going to turn their radios up.
And it's going to escalate.
Everyone just keeps turning up the radios, and we end up with nothing, completely unusable bandwidth.
Right.
This is sort of the same thing. If you're going to have 500 devices on your desk, the trick is not to up the power. The trick is to decrease the power until they can all be heard.
Oh, okay. All right. That makes sense. I like that.
Yeah. Now, there is another thing that people should think of, and actually, it's the same idea as what Xeris has done with these. So the whole idea was to use some sort of antenna structure, this specifically designed for this wavelength, to allow it to focus both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz signals down a particular azimuth, right?
Right. And then if you imagine it in an array, they're all just shooting off in those different
precisely
angles.
Now, I can actually do that with a lot less expense using some cheap antennas. Something like this. Now, this is just a 360-degree antenna. Yeah, you have to go to the overhead. Yeah, that's just it's a big old antenna.
Uh-huh.
Not super useful. That basically just puts out a lot of power in 360 degrees.
Okay, it's going all over the
not
place.
Not great. Mm-hmm. But it does increase the sensitivity. This is what's called a panel antenna. This is only shooting out signal at the front.
Okay, so you can really focus.
I can focus. In fact, it's pretty narrow. It's sort of like this, if you go to the side view. There you go. That's just about what I'm shooting out, which is it's kind of like this, but the difference is this has a pigtail, so I can connect it to different types of devices.
Okay, so would you use something like this if you wanted to send like your network signal to like in a detached house from your wherever you are?
So yeah. If I was to set up a bridge, so I had two access points that were acting as a bridge, I would get two of these antennas. I would hook them up to those APs. And then have the antennas facing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very narrow, not super narrow, but very rather narrow corridor mm-hmm. where I'm sending Wi-Fi signals back and forth.
Okay.
I get better gain. I get better transmission, effective transmission of signal energy down the azimuth that I want.
Yeah.
But there's a caveat to this.
What's that?
The caveat is most of these antennas have been optimized for either 2.4 or 5 gigahertz.
What's wrong with that?
Well, a lot of like this, it would not work on this. It would not work on this for multiple reasons. The connectors fit. It's the same connector size. But unfortunately, this is using a MIMO setup, multiple in, multiple out. So it needs all its antennas. So if I take one antenna and I make it vastly different, that system's not working anymore.
Okay, so you have to buy like a router specifically made to have something like this
something
attached
that,
to it?
And you'd also, like for example, these are 2.4 gigahertz antennas.
Mm-hmm.
This is 2.4 and 5 gigahertz.
Okay.
The 5 gigahertz is not going to be served well by those antennas. It will just bleed all over the place.
So would you then have an Ethernet hook up into that to another like bridge router that you could then use this on? Is that how you would do it?
Yeah, or I would get like an access point that's specifically 5 gigahertz or specifically 2.4 gigahertz.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So antennas are good. It used to be a no-brainer. But when they started doing MIMO, which is multiple in, multiple out,
mm-hmm.
and when they started doing 802.11 AC, and when they started doing beamforming, which requires all the antennas,
right?
You can actually decrease the efficiency of your wireless access point by using external antennas.
Okay. One thing, could you explain beamforming?
Okay.
I know this one does it. I know my router at home does, but I mean, I can turn it on, and I don't know if it's doing it.
Very
or not.
Good question. Because actually, yes. Beamforming is one of these magic words that you hear and like, oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, ooh. It's like something from Star Trek. Like, Scotty, I need the beamforming now.
And, okay, so do you remember, have you seen those big AWACS planes with the huge radar dome
yes.
on top?
Oh, I love those things.
Yeah, some of the newer ones, they don't actually have to rotate.
Oh.
The reason why they don't have to rotate, it's all solid state. They choose what's called a phased array. By using creative interference, I can use multiple antennas. In the case of that, I can use dozens, hundreds of antennas
mm-hmm.
that will emit the same signal slightly out of phase with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the combination of that of all that energy
mm-hmm.
sends the energy down one particular path.
Okay.
So, for example, let's take this. This has four antennas, and this does actually do beamforming. It can track where around the router the devices that it's communicating with.
Mm-hmm.
And what it will do is it will slightly put out of phase a signal here. So it cancels the signal going this way.
Right.
Let's say that's the device. It's putting it out of phase so that only the signal going in this direction actually makes it. It gets canceled out all the way around.
And is it like amplified too? Like it going that direction? Is that,
yeah. Because I'm putting out power from four different sources.
Yeah.
And it also allows me, since I know where it is, it allows me to listen better because it can take in multiple signals. It didn't used to be able to do this. If you took in multiple signals, it used to mess you up. But now there's enough processing power in here where it can take a fractured signal, not just this coming to these four antennas, but it can be bouncing off walls, bouncing off windows.
Mm-hmm.
And the processor will kind of put it all back together.
Okay. All right. So say you set beamforming. Is that going to interfere with any of your other devices that don't have beamforming? Like
no.
No. It doesn't matter.
The device doesn't have to have the beamforming, only the base station.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's not a perfect tech.
Yeah.
Which is why Xeris went a different approach. A lot of enterprise companies went with the beamforming idea because they could do it with their existing hardware.
Yeah.
They just change the software. But Zeros recognize beamforming is nice, but you're still having, you know, signal emanating out the back. This right. is, no, it's only going out the front. It's a okay. physical block to the RF energy going out the back.
So if I'm, say I have like my laptop set up in far away, like in a separate room, and I have it set for beamforming to that device, are any of my other devices that aren't set for that going to suffer because of it? No, it doesn't matter.
No. And you don't have to have your laptop set for the beamforming.
This, what would you set for?
Just this. This is what needs to happen.
So you just,
your laptop actually doesn't do beamforming back.
Mm. Right.
You've got some crazy-ass laptop I don't know about.
If I just put antennas on my laptop, will that help?
Yes.
Also, with the antennas, can you just set them up anywhere? Like, does it?
I prefer to set them up so that it looks like my router's walking.
That's what I thought.
See? You know, just kind of like...
Yeah, like a little spider.
Yeah, right?
That's how I always do it.
No.
No?
Don't do that.
It doesn't matter?
It doesn't really matter, but, I mean, just use common sense.
What?
Don't, like, destroy
Well, see,
them.
For beamforming, I would imagine that you just point the antennas at the device that you want.
Because the beam comes up at the top of the antenna, right?
Is that not That's how not it works? It doesn't work that way at all. Okay.
Okay.
We're learning, Padre.
Okay, actually, that's a legitimate question. When you think about where signal comes out of, an antenna is essentially just a wire. And this particular, this one has a waveguide to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the signal doesn't shoot out the top of the wire. The entire wire vibrates.
Right.
And the signal comes off the wire.
You know how actually I learned that? Was when we were playing with the Cyma drones.
Oh, right,
and
right.
I wanted to amplify the signal out of the remote to the drone so that it could go
and
farther.
You were pointing it at the drone. Right?
Well, yes,
it
I
works
was.
It like that, does it?
But I also learned that the wire has to be a specific yep. length
you
to work at that
it
frequency.
Has to vibrate at that frequency.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, folks, we know that this was a lot of information. We did a lot of technical stuff. Hopefully, you got it. Brian's been here to make sure that I don't talk around the subject so that you can't understand it.
That's right. I mean, I understood everything. I just wanted to ask the basic questions
right.
for the audience.
He got it. He got it. Now, we want to make sure that you can find all of this. This is going to be in our show notes. And, Brian, where did they find that?
You can go to twit.tv/KH, and not only will you find our show notes, but you'll find links for any of the products that we may have talked about. And also, you can subscribe and download, which you'll want to do because this is a multi-part episode.
Boom. What?
Boom That's goes the go. Dynamite.
Exactly. Also, don't forget that you can find us on the social, specifically on Google+. Just go to Google+ and look for Know How. Very short approval process to keep out all the spam accounts. But once you're in, you get almost 11,000 Kitas. That's our know-it-alls. This is a great place for you to drop pictures of projects. In fact, we've got some pictures of projects that are going to be ending up in future episodes.
Cool.
Because some of them have been fantastic. Did you see the one with the Raspberry Pi Zero cases that were polished, like the copper and the aluminum?
Oh, they would do that.
They're so nice. They're
that
so
sounds
nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, but get in there, ask questions, answer questions. Be part of the know-how community. Again, go to Google+ and look for know-how.
But that's not the only place you can find us. You can also go to Twitter, and you can find out when we go to bed, because it's usually around 1 o'clock when we're tweeting. I am at @cranky_hippo.
And you can find me at @PadreSJ. And we've got a third member of our group that you should really follow him, because he needs your love and your support. He's a longtime member of the Twit TV family. He's a good guy.
He lives in the abyss.
Yeah, we've known him forever. We call him Steve.
Feels like forever.
Yeah.
Is fifth grade forever?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, back in fifth grade, Steve was he was a little rascal.
Oh, he was.
Yeah.
When he decided to show up for school.
Yeah. But please follow Steve at ANELF3. That's twitter.com/ANELF3.
Excuse me, Padre.
Yeah.
That's pronounced Alex.
Oh. That's a weird pronunciation
for
Steve.
Is that like
a
middle name? Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know. It must be French.
Yeah.
Anyways, until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how,
go route it.